Good evening. This is Jilly Jeezy. Welcome to Family Matters. I am so happy that you are all here tonight, and another great guest will be joining us shortly. I am sorry to say, although it is for a very good reason, Judge Michelle is not going to be with us right away, and I hope that she gets home and can get on the phone. She has been doing judges training all week this week, which is a terrific thing for all of the things that we are publicized for in Illinois. We are doing terrific things in the realm of family matters and family court and judicial education and legislative reform here in Illinois. So proud of my home state, and Judge Michelle is doing some great things. And this is a mandatory judges training in Illinois. All family court judges have to attend. She's teaching on parental alienation and visitation interference, the precursor to parental alienation. It's so exciting that we are getting this done. And guess what? They are listening to us. And so as Michelle marches forward, we all put on our armor and try to really make a difference here in the state of Illinois, nationwide, in Canada, globally. We're all making a difference. And I want to welcome someone who last minute, my dear friend Chris Jones, has come through for me and is going to be on with Dr. Kathleen and I tonight. Hi, Chris.
Jill, how are you?
I am so great, and I just want to thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule tonight and jumping on the phone with us very, very last minute.
I am very excited that I'm going to hear Dr. Kathleen. We're so close together. We're just across the Rockies here, so it's great.
Well, she's like a rock star, you know, in the parental alienation world. It's the big, small world of parental alienation. We all kind of know each other, and there's just a handful of experts, and she is one of them. And we've had almost everybody on the show at one time or another, but tonight will be our first night with Dr. Kathleen, and I told her earlier that, you know, certainly she is more than one show. So I think we will have her on again. I want to introduce you, though, Chris. You are the founder of the Parental Alienation Awareness Network of Alberta. How is that going?
It's going okay. I've been doing this for a while, and I was on the PAAO board there for a bit.
Right.
But I really felt that it was important to really focus on local activities and see if we can raise, you know, keep everybody involved and raise the profile on this issue.
Well, that's important, isn't it? I mean, because that's what it's all about. If we can get the word out there, and of course, next week is our day. You know, Parental Alienation Awareness Day and the Bubbles of Love campaign is April 25th, which is next Wednesday in Illinois and Pennsylvania, first time ever. We have Parental Alienation Awareness Month. We have a fight going on, a friendly fight going on between Texas and Alabama right now for proclamations. I think last count, Wendy Archer in Texas was up to 23 proclamations, and Alabama was somewhere up there as well. And so we have Bubbles of Love events going on all over the world, but more in the U.S. than have ever been. And I think you've got an event going on, don't you, Chris?
Yeah, we have Calgary, we have Edmonton, and of course Red Deer is going to be Rhonda. Yeah.
Yeah, Rhonda Pisanello, who is a board member for PAO, has an event. But I mean, there are so many events, and if you don't know about one in your area, go to the BOLD website, Bubbles of Love Day website, and you can see them all listed. We have one here in Springfield, Illinois, which is, you know, everyone's blowing bubbles, so it'll be very, very exciting. I want to get to our guest, Chris, who we've touched on a moment ago. She is a lovely woman from Canada, Dr. Kathleen Ray. Welcome, Kathleen.
Hi, Jill. Hi, Chris. It's really nice to be with both of you.
Well, you, as I said, you are an expert in the world of parental alienation. Kathleen, tell us, how did you get to the point, because you've been in this arena for 22 years working, how did you get to the point where you decided this is where you wanted to turn your efforts and really make a difference?
Wow, that's a really great question. And That could take me an hour in itself to do that, but let me just give you a very brief rationale for that. Years ago, I started off as a legal assistant, and I was working for a very, very large law firm in downtown Vancouver. And at that time, I was doing practicing with a very wonderful family law lawyer, in which that was specifically all the work we did. And one day, I will never forget, there was this little boy, and he was sitting in the reception area, and I happened to be filling in for the receptionist, and this little boy was staring across the hallway into the boardroom where his mother, father, and their legal representatives were going to bat. And this little boy kept saying, "I hate that B-I-T-C-H. I hate her." And he was calling her by her first name. Now, keep in mind, this was back in the late 70s, early 80s when this occurred. And I thought to myself, wait a minute, this just doesn't make sense to me, because I've read this file, and this particular mom and her son have had an amazing relationship with each other. Why is it that this little boy is so strongly combated against his mother? Well, back then, I didn't have a clue about the term parental alienation, and it was something that just kept kind of chiseling away at me in my mind, thinking, there has to be more to this. And so it was from there that I started doing some research at a particular university here in British Columbia, and lo and behold, one day, as a matter of fact, I think it was about 11.04 p.m. one evening, I came across Richard Gardner's work, and then all of a sudden from there, my world just kind of turned into a different place, and I realized that this was something that I wanted to devote the rest of my life to, and that's my answer.
Incredible. That's an incredible story. Do you know what happened to that little boy?
Unfortunately, I don't, but I must tell you, Jill, I think about him almost daily.
Yeah, I bet you do. It would be interesting if you could have followed him to see how it ended up and if he did have a good relationship in the end with his mother.
That's right, yeah.
Kathleen, hi, it's Chris here.
Hi, Chris.
And we haven't had a chance to talk, even though we traded back and forth. I have one other thing I just wanted to, you know, one of the books that I read early on was from Vancouver by a mm-hmm. woman called Kim Richardson, who wrote A Kidnapped Mind.
Oh, yes.
And,
you mean Pamela Richardson.
Pamela.
I'm sorry, Pam Richardson. Yes,
yes.
Sorry.
Yes.
And sorry about that. And I was thinking, you know, that was just that was also in Vancouver. Were you there at that time?
Yes, I was living in Vancouver at that time. Yes.
Well, that's a horrible story for people who don't know it. I mean, Pam has done a great job, you know, really forming the Dash Foundation and doing everything that she needs to do to get the word out. But her son at 16 years old jumped off a bridge and committed suicide, which is the ultimate, you know, form of parental alienation. And what a horrible thing to have to talk about. But her book, A Kidnapped Mind, is a must read for any parent who's going through this. I mean, it's a horrible ending to a horrible story, but it really shows you how incredibly strong the alienation process can be.
Well, I think
absolutely.
It was also one of the things that really brought the issue right front and center to people, certainly in BC and certainly in Canada. It was a major issue, that book. So.
Yes, very much so. And I really value and I really honor the incredible contributions that Pamela has made and I know will continue to make in the world of parental alienation, given the very sad circumstances that occurred in her life.
Well, she's a perfect example, I think, of how to turn, you know, I always say I turned my vinegar into lemonade, but she is the perfect example of how to become a very strong advocate for a cause that's affected you directly and to walk in her steps and follow the path that she has is so helpful to so many alienated parents who otherwise would languish and be depressed and sad about what's happening to them.
Absolutely.
Kathleen, I want to ask you, because you are doing something that's incredibly important, and I want to talk about this at the beginning of the show and at the end of the show. You're doing an online research study. Can you tell us about that? And you need to recruit some participants, right?
Yeah, we've had a great turnout already, but I really, really want to have a very, very good-sized sample for this study. So we are still currently recruiting individuals, and what it is we're conducting an online research study on the potential long-term effects of parental alienation on alienated parents. To date, there really hasn't been anything in that depth that's been done. So what we're doing is we're recruiting male and female research participants from diversified backgrounds who have to be between the ages of 25 to 65 years of age and are separated or divorced. The potential participants also have to have at least one child or adolescent from their previous marriage and be experiencing some or all of the manifestations of parental alienation. Other selection criteria is they also must not have had any court evidence that they have engaged in any form of abuse. This does not include, of course, any false allegations of abuse. So we actually started the selection criteria process back in the fall, and as I said, it's still open for participation, and all people have to do is go on to our parentalalienationhelp.org website, switch over to or click on research study, and the information will be there for them. And then they just have to contact us through the directions that are given on the website. And if they, like I said, are suitable, they will be given the link to the online study right away to do for us. And it only takes about 10 minutes on average for people to do the questionnaire online.
What are you going to do with the results of the study, Kathleen? Are you doing another book or...
Well, actually, it will be sent for potential publication in a peer-reviewed scholarly journal. Likely it will be the American Journal of Family Therapy.
Good, good. So yeah. For anybody that wants to participate, parentalalienationhelp.org and click on research study, and we'll announce that again at the end of the show. And I have questions all over the place in the chat room asking for the web address for that. So I think you'll have some people wanting to participate. Chris, do you have a question for Kathleen?
Well, I was just going to say, how large a study are you planning?
Well, I wish I could say thousands, Chris, but that's not going to happen. Probably realistically, we're going to be looking at anywhere between 350 to 500 people.
Wow, that's great.
That gives you a pretty good sampling. I mean, I think that's a great number. Yeah, and really,
yeah.
Kathleen, I mean, if you really hit it hard, I think you could have potentially many more than that.
I think so, absolutely.
And when do you, I mean, how far along? Do you think you'll be recruiting probably for the next 6 months? Or?
Definitely, yes. Yeah, we hope to have the study written up and ready to be published by, you know, somewhere around the end of the year. But if it's the beginning of the year, that's just fine, too.
Good. Okay, well, everybody check it out, and we will again repeat that at the end of the show so that you know where to go and how to participate if you meet the criteria for Dr. Kathleen's study. Kathleen, you know, something that's very important and something that Judge Michelle and I we work with Brian Ludmer, and you know Brian very well. But something that I think is so important and something we hope in the United States happens is the training of mental health professionals that they can, you know, it almost seems that when some of these psychotherapists, psychoanalysts work with kids who are experiencing parental alienation, it almost exacerbates the problem, especially if they've aligned with the alienating parent. So how do you, and you have advanced training programs, how do you get these mental health professionals on board and train them and teach them and show them what's what and how to deal with this issue?
Well, that's a great question. Thanks for asking that. Yes, I do advanced training programs throughout Canada and the United States. Right now we're focusing on Western Canada, and we have some upcoming trainings in Vancouver and actually Red Deer, Alberta, right in Chris's neck of the woods. And in terms of kind of getting people on board, we do pretty widespread advertising with different psychological organizations, you know, social workers organizations, you know, anybody who's in the mental health field. Our director of marketing and events, Tara, does a really good job in, you know, trying to recruit as many people to participate in these programs. Having said that, it's interesting because what we find is that a lot of people who are, for example, child protection workers, even though they're invited to attend, statistically, not a whole lot show up. And I find that really, really concerning because when it comes to doing a really effective assessment in terms of child protection issues, especially when it comes to false allegations of abuse, which are common in parental alienation cases, I'd really like to know what it is that they are doing as opposed to what various persons like myself would prefer for them to be doing, if I can put it that way in a delicate manner. I work with so many cases, both on a counseling process as well as through a consulting process, Jill and Chris, where it just numbs me when it comes to how many alienated parents I've worked with who have been so horrifically falsely accused of abuse issues. And I have to shake my head and go, why are these people not attending programs like this to have a greater understanding, knowledge, and awareness mm-hmm. of how to work with these particular issues?
I think so many times, too, Kathleen, you deal with, and with the judges' training and the legislators, you deal with yeah. egos that don't want to be told something that they don't really understand. And it's so difficult to, you almost want to bang their head against the wall and say, but you could save a child's soul if you just listen and understand the dynamic here.
That is so very true.
Also, Jill, you know, there's another aspect to this, and I think it's just, you know, it's similar. It's so hard to crack into the behind the thin blue line of the justice system.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of these, certainly in Alberta, I can say, so many of the consultants and therapists are very strongly related to the court system. They're almost all appointed, and I thought when we were talking last year, one of the things that Illinois, and you, I know you've been, this is something you're doing, you sort of have a, I can't remember what the term was, but it was like a court, you're appointed by the court as a, to help people when they are in court, is that right?
Yeah, as a qualified expert. I was qualified yeah. as an expert in the field of parental alienation, which was unheard of. And that testimony and that custody trial, you know, I thought this judge is never going to get it. And Kathleen, it was so funny. I turned to the judge and I explained to him I wasn't addressing the child. I was just addressing mm-hmm. the issue of parental alienation. And I spoke to the judge. And when I got done, he said, I know more about this than I ever cared to know, but you presented more facts than you know anybody I've ever heard, and I'm going to qualify you as an expert, and I'm going to allow this testimony to be put in the record, which was incredible.
Wow.
That this
yeah,
guy,
that's great.
Yeah, because, I mean, in the U.S., and I don't know what it's like in Canada as far as retention of judges and running and all of that, but we've got judges who sit, you know, on the bench for years and years and years and years. So you could have a 70-year-old judge who doesn't have any idea about this. I mean, he may have seen it, but he doesn't know that really what it is and really doesn't care because he wants his pension and he wants to go home at 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
yeah. And not
no,
always.
Unfortunately, but true. That is very common in terms of my region and seeing that kind of thing happen. At the same time, there are many good judges out there as well.
Oh, of course.
And so I certainly don't want to make a general, you know, generalization by any means. As a matter of fact, I have had occasions where when I have testified in court that a judge will actually say, if I have further questions or I need to talk to you, may I contact you
yes,
tomorrow?
Which is great.
And, of course, I'm totally open.
And
yeah, so, you know,
that's
so important.
we're really finding that with this judge's training is that Michelle is getting follow-up calls from judges who have heard her present and saying, look, this is in my courtroom. What do you suggest I do? And that's amazing. You know, we are so happy that we've touched the lives, hopefully, of children that are coming through courtrooms today in Illinois. And that's exciting. I have a question from the chat room that I want to ask you. How does Kathleen recommend siblings of an alienated mother of three children held hostage by a severe alienator intervene?
Whoa, that's a loaded question.
And I got to tell you, this is a great mom from Colorado. Love her, adore her. But, I mean, this is, you know, as I hear every day, this is one of the worst cases of alienation I've ever, you know, I've ever heard. And this is one of the worst cases I've ever heard.
Wow.
So.
Yeah. Well, not knowing what the circumstances are, it makes it a little bit difficult for me to answer it. However, you know, what I would say is, you know, get as much support and financial backup as possible. And the reason being is, sadly but true, we know that going through this process, unfortunately, is a very expensive thing. However, as far as I'm concerned, you cannot put a price on a child, and this child or children need to be rescued. And so, you know, get as much backup and support as possible to be able to fight this case tooth and nail.
Okay, Margie, there's your answer. Kathleen, there's so much trauma involved for everyone who's involved in a parental alienation dynamic. The child, of course, is the victim, but the target parent and his or her family is brokenhearted and sad, and so trauma abounds. Let's talk about trauma and how it relates to parental alienation.
Great. Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah, well, you know, every one of us naturally gets thrown curveballs throughout life, and sometimes those curveballs can be confusing and overwhelming, and sometimes they seem like nothing at all. Did you know, Jill, that small, medium, big, or even gigantic-sized curveballs are actually a form of trauma?
Sure.
Yeah. So single or multiple traumas can actually create imbalances in our brain and our nervous system, which can negatively impact how we think, feel, and act in life. And this is a scientific fact. There's been a lot of scientific studies that have been done on this, especially in recent time. And what's been found is that anybody who's been traumatized, if that person doesn't effectively release the energy, it becomes frozen or blocked in our brain and nervous system and, of course, will cause a variety of problems. And so what I'd like to do is just briefly focus on psychological trauma, not physical trauma, such as sustaining a body injury, and how it actually relates to the complex continuum of parental alienation. I want to point out, though, that stress reactions and physiological reactions certainly, you know, do go hand in hand. Now, as we all know, the induction of parental alienation is a horrific form of child emotional, or as some people refer to, psychological abuse. And the severe traumatization of the PAS child, the alienated parent, and other close relatives of the targeted parent, including grandparents, is not often taken into consideration. Consequently, various members of alienated families can and do suffer from psychological trauma. And can I just start off and I'll tell you a little bit about, you know, just in brief, how this occurs with alienated children?
Of course.
Okay. Well, first of all, the two commonly overlooked causes of child psychological trauma are, one, the sudden loss of someone close, and two, the breakup of a once loving family. And this is especially the case when this happens unexpectedly for a child. So PAS produces a systematic confusion of the alienated child's awareness and self-awareness. The child loses the ability to trust his or her own judgments and feelings. The child becomes ultimately dependent upon the programming parent. And in my eyes, the programming parent is a selfish, narcissistic bully. And as such, the child is robbed of his or her sense of reality, along with his or her sense of self-concept. Additionally, the child's identity becomes undermined, discolored, and split. And the resulting effects are negative self-assessment, a lack of self-esteem, and deep-seated insecurities, shared delusional thinking with the programmer, among other factors. Now, keep in mind that traumatic experiences often involve a threat to life or safety, but any situation that leaves you feeling overwhelmed, frightened, or alone can be traumatic, even if it doesn't involve physical harm. So it's not the objective facts that determine whether an event is traumatic to a child or an adult, for that matter, but his or her subjective emotional experience of the event. So the more frightened and helpless a child feels, the more likely the child's going to be traumatized. And the most common emotional and psychological symptoms of trauma that are seen among alienated children are initially denial or shock or even disbelief. Then there's anger, irritability, mood swings, guilt, shame or self-blame, feeling sad or hopeless, confusion, difficulty concentrating, some memory impairment, anxiety and fear. Then they tend to get into that place of where they're, you know, going into a place of becoming withdrawn or will avoid. They feel disconnected or numb. And additionally, many alienated children will also experience physical symptoms of trauma, such as sleep disturbances, including bad dreams or nightmares, being startled easily, a racing heartbeat, stomach aches and pains, fatigue, edginess, agitation, and or muscle tension. And so the greater the level of severity of PAS, the greater the likelihood that these symptoms will last unless the child has the ability to process the trauma effectively. Now, sometimes, even when an alienated child begins to feel better, he or she may be troubled from time to time by painful memories or emotions, especially in response to triggers such as an anniversary of an event or an image, sound, or situation that reminds the child of the traumatic experience. And I think it's really important for listeners to keep in mind that trauma survivors go through a grieving process. This process, while extremely painful, is easier if alienated children have the ability to turn to others for support, take care of themselves, and be able to talk about how they feel. But this is a major problem for alienated children because they can't share their pain or turn to the programming parent for the type of support they really need. Typically, in these types of situations, children who favor one parent over another are fearful to display any form of disloyalty to the favored parent and or are fearful to share any positive information regarding their contact with the unfavored parent. And in the latter cases, many children assume or know for fact that the favored parent will likely punish them in some manner if they show any form of affection towards the targeted parent. And both verbal cues as well as nonverbal cues on the favored parent's part can thwart children from sharing any positive thoughts, feelings, or behaviors associated with the rejected or targeted parent. So given that, how on earth are these children able to adequately seek the support from their indoctrinating parent? Well, that's pretty impossible, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And moreover, many alienating parents refuse to take their kids for counseling, or they tend to fire mental health professionals who have properly assessed, diagnosed, and begun to treat the alienated child. So
that brings up a good point. How do you deal with challenging situations with clients, perhaps? And I know this is a problem I've heard of from other therapists when you know they're dealing with a very upset parent, and they might, you know, you feel they're taking it out on you or they're blaming you. I mean, how do you deal with that?
Right. Yeah, it's a really good question, Chris. And, you know, there's no simple answer. Typically speaking, I will do everything I possibly can to try and help educate the alienating parent. Now, they may say they listen and, you know, they come and, you know, there's a lot of rolling of the eyes that can take place and, you know, they continue to want to victimize themselves and, you know, play the poor me card. So, obviously, that doesn't always work. And for the most part, it doesn't. However, I'm the type of person that when I see this kind of stuff going on, I will call a spade a spade. And these children, because as I've mentioned before, and I know both of you are very much this way as well, recognize that they need to be rescued. Mm-hmm. And so what I do, if need be, and it happens quite often, is I will write a letter to the lawyers involved, or I will, if I have to, write a letter to a judge. I've done that quite often in recent time. There's different ways of going about it. If there's a parenting coordinator involved, I'm going to write a lengthy report to the parenting coordinator and know that that information is going to go to the legal representatives involved, and I'll do whatever I can to help, you know, work in the best interests of the children that way.
Right.
Kathleen, you said something that, a couple of things. So many times I talk to parents that indicate that my child is being disrespectful, I just can't stand it, and they blame their child for the way that they're behaving. How do you tell or counsel people to deal with that when they're going through this situation in order to see that it's not the child who's spewing these horrible, disrespectful things at them, that it is, they're becoming enmeshed in the whole personality of the alienator? So how do you respond to that?
Yeah, that's a great question, too. Again, there's different ways I'll go about that, using various kinds of therapeutic interventions. But one really simple way of doing it from a behavioral perspective is I'll say to the parent, you know, and again, it's done in a very non-judgmental, delicate way, I'll tell you what, you know, I would love to hear what's going on at home between, you know, these dynamics that you're talking to me about, between you and your child. Would it be okay, and I get the permission of both of them, would it be okay if you guys were to tape record this for me? You know, just tape it on your iPhone or whatever, and then, you know, bring it in, and let's explore that together. And I find that by doing that, sometimes that can be a helpful way for a parent to see that, oh, wait a minute, you know what? I've just realized now that I've probably been striking more bombs at my child than I have been, you know, giving them flowers or building blocks. So there's different ways of handling it, but I find that that is one way that can certainly be very beneficial in helping parents kind of turn around and reflect in the mirror, so to speak.
Good, and that's important. The other thing I wanted to talk about is you said there are some things that will remind the child of the traumatic experiences that they have experienced and create the confusion, denial, shock, anger, all of the mood swings. But what happens to an alienated child when they see something that reminds them of a pleasant memory of that parent that they have pushed away?
Yeah, well, and again, it depends on the level of severity of exposure to parental alienation behaviors on the alienator's part. As I'm sure you're aware, we see less and less of severely alienated children having any memory of a pleasant experience with the other parent, and that even includes times when therapists like myself will, you know, have photos or videos. I mean, just recently I was showing a video to a little boy that the targeted parent had sent me of the two of them, and this little guy was still in denial, saying, and he even started joking with me and saying, are you sure I don't have a twin brother? Because that's not me. And I'm and I mean, that's just how much this delusion becomes just so, so prominent in their lives. So, you know, it definitely, with the kids who are in the mild range, from a counseling perspective, there is a really, really good chance that you can help them in terms of changing irrational thinking by using photographs and, you know, other kinds of memorabilia. But like I said, when it comes to the moderate to severe cases, it's a lot harder to be able to do that.
I can remember the last real conversation I had with my youngest daughter, and we did musicals together all the time in local theater, and I said, do you remember when we did Annie and I was Miss Hannigan and you were an orphan? And she said, I was never in a play with you. And it was such a, you know, everything that I knew about parental alienation, but I didn't think it really applied to me. But there it was, and it was like a slap in the face to understand that you know, the process was complete for me. So it is real, and I think people, you know, I would have never guessed in a million years that I would say that I would be doing a show on this now and this would be happening to me. But if people think it isn't going to happen, they're delusional because it's so
true.
Easy.
Yeah.
I just want to jump in here and say I have another question here for Kathleen, because I thought it was interesting. It, you know, you have been discussing that when you're doing, it seems that a number of your therapy sessions are done with both parents and with a child. So I was wondering, is that a common, like, do you typically meet with one parent and a child, or do you meet with all, or do you just meet with a child, or is there a process where you usually go through that, especially if there's a severe alienation going on?
Great question. Yes. For the most part, when it comes to counseling, I'm particularly working with the children. And one of my other associates will work with, or another colleague off the premises will work with other members of the family. So when someone like the person that I used as an example, who is an alienating parent, that person came for me to give them some, you know, information about the counseling process with the children, but I'm not actually working or was working with that particular person.
Kathleen, I'm going to go ahead, Chris.
It depends on the circumstances, but
it really does. Yeah.
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 Because I mean, again, when you know, I know of situations where targeted parents have gone into therapy sessions with their alienated child. And the child will refuse to even acknowledge that the parent's there, and they refuse to even engage. So
that's right.
So when you're in a really severe situation, I mean, I can't even imagine how you're going to conduct that kind of interview. And really, you know, where do you go from there, apart from, as you say, having a video or something like that? And really,
yeah,
it's very difficult on the targeted parent because they feel completely unempowered by it.
Yes, lost and helpless. Absolutely. A huge emotional roller coaster that they experience. There's different stages that I go through, and clearly we don't have time to really discuss that given our limited time left this evening. But there's a process that I use in working with these children, that those who are really severely alienated, you're absolutely right, Chris, you can't have them and their targeted parent in the same room with each other. So there's a process that I work through. And I use, part of that process is I use what's called the theoretical model of change. And I'm focusing on where the child is in terms of change. So if they're pre-contemplative, are they contemplative, are they at a stage where we can prepare now for them to get back together with the targeted parent in terms of reunification, you know, and then there's different things I do when the kids get to, you know, what's referred to as the action stage within that model. So I incorporate that model with other kinds of models, and, of course, I use a lot of good work in terms of dealing with getting rid of the cognitive distortions and delusional thinking that's taking place.
Great.
Dr. Kathleen, we have a call that I'm going to take from Colorado. Hi, Margie.
Hi. Hi, Jill. Hi, Kathleen. Hi, everyone. Thank you for your wonderful... Can you hear me?
Yeah, sure. Do you have a question for Kathleen?
Yes, I do. We went through a severe case, and I was just wondering what your experience has been as a therapist and professional, that if an evaluator, can they possibly go back in when I have a youngest son who's 16, and basically they missed what was going on, a severe alienation, and it was a goodbye session recommended for the kids with me.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of years ago. Now, my youngest is now 16, and he does have documented false memories of hatred created in him. Can evaluator, can you go back in, I mean, and at realizing that they missed what was going on? And, I mean, I don't know. I've seen so many of these cases where there's been people with not willing to kind of eat some humble pie.
That's a nice way of putting it.
Say, you know what? This is really severe. You know, there's no other way but to reverse custody here. I mean, how
Margie,
realistic?
Margie, how long ago was that evaluation done?
2009.
Okay, so approximately 3 years we're looking at. Well, I honestly, because I don't practice in Colorado, I don't know exactly what that would look like in your area. But here where I practice, it would be possible for a reevaluation to be done as long as, again, both parties and the legal representatives involved all agree to it. That, of course, in itself can be problematic. But it's certainly not uncommon for up here in British Columbia, these kinds of evaluations tend to be called Section 15s, and it's not uncommon for either the same evaluator or a new evaluator to do another evaluation on the child or children in question.
Well, the other question that I had, even thinking about possibly taking such steps, is because it's so adversarial, the whole family court system, would it then create more of that kind of toxic glue with the kids with their alienating father? You know, I mean, because who knows how long this could be dragged out, as what has happened before and seems to happen regularly, the delays and,
absolutely.
You know, would it
yeah.
Would it be just counter-effective? I mean,
well, again, you know, it really depends on each situation. And one of the things that those of us who are involved in this field of work really need to work hard at doing is, again, educating the legal system as well as the mental health system
mm-hmm.
in understanding what third-party alienation is all about.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that all these darn general adjournments that take place in court, you know, there's some cases that I've been working on now that are going on over 2 years old, which there's been so many adjournments done that, you know, the trial hasn't even occurred yet.
Mm-hmm.
And these poor kids are just suffering like you wouldn't believe. And so, again, you know, it's also a political issue as well, and Chris, I'm sure you can speak to that, that a lot of information needs to be provided so that the mental and legal systems will be able to collectively work in the best interest of the children far better than what's happening now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think the work that Jill and Michelle are doing, I mean, that is fantastic, educating the judges and having them be receptive and actually seeing if they can call upon these people like you and parenting coordinators to ask for help and how to deal with these cases is so encouraging.
Thanks, Margie. I appreciate your call.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you,
thanks
guys.
So
keep
much.
Up the...
Thanks.
Kathleen. One of the questions in the chat room is this, and this is something that I get asked every day on the phone with alienated parents is, you know, you're expected when you're an alienated parent and still having contact with your child, they're still coming to see you, that you're supposed to have the personality and abilities of a politician, react to nothing unfavorably, walk on eggshells, act like a robot. How do you behave when your children come over, if you're still having contact and you see signs of mild to moderate alienation?
Yeah. There are so many things involved there. You're so right. I mean, these poor parents, like you said, they're just walking on eggshells because children who are especially, especially moderate to severe, but I don't want to downgrade the mildly alienated child either, they tend to be spying on the alienated parent. And so they will, you know, take that information home back to the alienating parents saying, yeah, this is what, you know, mommy or daddy said or did. And, you know, it just becomes counterintuitive or counterproductive. There's in my book, I have written the 12 most common mistakes that alienating parents tend to make. And, you know, One of the things that I think is really important is to maintain a really, really thick skin. And I know that's not easy by any means. But if a child is experiencing anything other than that, in other words, any kind of picking up on negative emotions, whether they're, again, they're verbal or they're nonverbal cues, that could actually play more into the alienation, and the child will end up thinking, you know what, it's absolutely right. This person is a real, you know, idiot or stupid, or I don't want to have anything to do with this person. So it is. It's a very, very delicate dance that needs to be done between the alienated parent and the child during these kinds of visitations. At the same time, discipline is important. So I always say to alienated parents, you know, you need to ensure that, you know, you're still acting as a parent. That's important. And, you know, in cases where false allegations of abuse have been made, well, ensure that you have somebody there who is going to witness what goes on during those visitations. So that may be supervised visitation where a parent will just on their own accord have somebody come. Other parents have done other things. I know of one family, for example, they really went to an extreme, but they ended up putting, you know, spy-type cameras in their house without the child knowing, you know.
But yeah. I'm so sorry to say that you have to be reduced to being a secret agent because that's how you feel.
You're
always
true.
Really looking over your shoulder, and you're trying to do things. And I can remember getting witnesses, always going somewhere with a witness. And it was very, unnerving to have to do that.
Well, it's what you said, walking on eggshells. And that's you feel it's very unnatural. But I think that's what you're talking about, Kathleen, when you say, you know, you have to have very thick skin. You have to be sort of on your not best behavior maybe, but you have to be aware of what you're doing almost all the time. That's very stressful on people.
Very, very stressful. Yeah.
I got to throw one thing out, and I just, because it happened just the other week, I heard from a dad actually who said he sees his daughter basically every 2 weeks, but he tries to call her every night. And and he's been doing this for a long time, and he never gets, he says they never pick up, and of course, he's only allowed to make one phone call anyway, so I don't know if he's, you know, he's almost breaching the court order, but he said that he could make a phone call one night, on a Wednesday night, I think it was, and he went to get his daughter that weekend, and she said, how come you didn't call on Wednesday? So even though nobody picked up the phone, she was monitoring the call display to make sure that he'd called that day or that evening, and she expected it. So I always think that's another example of how you never know how your efforts are being received, but you know when it's not being received, it's picked up. So
yeah,
that's
right.
True. You're being watched.
Yeah.
And I think with the advent of the increased use of the internet and Facebook and all of those things, I mean, it's so easy for your children to watch exactly what you're doing. And I'm always give a lot of admonitions to people who are posting things on Facebook that they shouldn't be posting for their children to see, because whether you know it or not, they're probably, if they can get into your page, they're probably looking at you.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Yes.
So,
yeah, and that's another thing, too, is, you know, alienated parents have such difficulty, and it's only understandable given the emotional roller coaster ride that they're always undergoing. But, you know, it's so easy to want to, you know, when in contact with your children during visits, to trash or bash or, you know, berate or put down or persecute the other parent. But, you know, the most important thing to always remember is that anytime you do that, you're modeling abusive behavior to your children,
right.
And this ultimately backfires, because the child's going to feel very uncomfortable and have less respect for you, and this kind of behavior on your part will likely push them further away from you.
You're right. Well, we've got about 11 minutes left, now 10, and I told you this hour would fly by, and you have just given us a wealth of knowledge already, but we would be remiss if we didn't talk about your workbook that you wrote in 2011, Toxic Divorce, a Workbook for Alienated Parents. Tell us about that.
Okay, well, it's at the time it was the first of its kind for alienated parents, and it's actually divided into three parts. The first part actually provides up-to-date knowledge and understanding, you know, prior, you know, to when it was published in July 2011, to help alienated parents personally deal with the ramifications of PAS, or to help those who do. So, from a really broad perspective, the book is written for a wide array of readers, including those directly affected by parental alienation, as well as for extended family members, significant others, counselors, social workers, psychologists, psychiatrists, child custody evaluators, family mediators, general practitioners, pediatricians, lawyers, judiciary, police officers, school administrators, teachers, policymakers, you name it. And part two, what it does is it provides step-by-step directions and strategies for targeted parents to help battle PAS. So the workbook actually teaches methods that have been shown to be very beneficial for individuals suffering from various forms of anxiety, panic, depression, jealousy, stress, anger, abandonment, trust, shame, and guilt issues. And given that targeted parents tend to experience one or more of those kinds of difficulties, the strategies provided in the book can, you know, be a great source of help that way. It also will help targeted parents improve their self-esteem, be able to handle stress better, and become less anxious and fearful while increasing their confidence in dealing with this horrible form of child abuse. And lastly, there's one third part of the book, and what it does is it offers additional important information for mental health professionals, targeted parents, and interested others. So clinicians, in reading the book, will have a greater understanding and appreciation for the need to get specialized training in this type of work.
How do we get the book, Kathleen?
Well, it's sold through global distribution worldwide, through large bookstores like Chapters Indigo, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and it's also available through our websites.
Good. Okay. And we'll go over that information in just a second. Chris?
Yeah, I was just on this workbook. I haven't actually had a chance to look at it, but it sounds like a great tool. How is it being received? I mean, you've obviously been doing this for some time. I know you had those series of sessions in BC in the fall, and you're coming here to Alberta in the spring here. How's it received?
Actually, it's been received very well, and I'm absolutely blown away by the fact that I received so many emails from individuals worldwide. And it's a very humbling experience because many people have written and have told me. I mean, I've had people in South Africa, Australia, Japan, Israel, New Zealand, and, of course, many, many people all over places like, you know, the United States and Canada. So I'm very, very pleased. And, you know, it was a grueling experience putting the book together, probably even more grueling than working on a PhD when I did. But it was certainly certainly seems worth it. And I just hope that any piece of information that people get from it, that it will certainly help them in their battle.
Well, and it's funny, you know, you look 10, 20 years ago, there were very few books on this issue and very few books like this one, and the one that Judge Michelle and I have just also released, which is an online downloadable workbook. And so this information, any way people can get it, they are hungry for it, they need it, and we're so happy, Dr. Kathleen, that yours is out there for them, you know, at their fingertips, to have a manual on how to deal with their journey through parental alienation.
Mm-hmm. The nice thing, too, about this particular book is many alienated parents actually use it so that, in the sense that they write all their notes, and there's different areas in the workbook that will say, you know, describe what's going on for you with this particular situation, and that way they actually take it to their attorney's office, and it makes it a lot easier to be able to, you know, relate to the attorney exactly what's going on. So there's an added benefit that way. The book is also available not only in soft cover, but it is also available as an e-book.
Good. There's a question in the chat room, Kathleen, and this is a little bit of a, I don't know, question you may not want to answer. What do you charge for your evaluations? Are you expensive like some of the other experts?
No, I definitely don't charge what some big-name experts in the U.S. charge. My fees range from, in terms of a consultation via Skype or phone, start at $180, that's Canadian. Mm-hmm. And in terms of doing child custody evaluations, it's a little bit higher than that, but not by much.
Good. Okay, that's good. I love it when people are doing things from the heart. And, I mean, you got to make a living, so you got to charge something. But that's
also
terrific.
Also, Kathleen, you're doing this, you're doing a number of, you're doing some of your evaluations over the Internet or over Skype, are you?
Yes, I do.
So you have that capability and availability.
Yes,
so
yeah, absolutely. I work with I have a lot of clients in the United States and Canada, whereby I do litigation-related consultations regarding this issue. I also have clients in Europe. And then in terms of the counseling piece, in some cases I'm able to do it via Skype. Other cases I'm not. It really depends on the particular dynamics of the family.
It really opens up a whole world to you, though, when you can use Skype or the Internet to do these counseling sessions or to do evaluations. It's amazing, isn't it?
It certainly is.
You have some, we just have a few minutes left. You have some seminars coming up, and I know you have, we talked about Alberta. What about in the U.S.? Where are you going to be?
U.S., we have, let's see, I haven't got the schedule in front of me, but I do believe that we are going to be going to Seattle and Portland in the fall. We have quite a bit of interest in California, and we have had some people expressing interest in places like Pennsylvania, and I'm also going to Toronto in the fall, so hopefully we'll be able to work our way down the east coast of the U.S., perhaps from the Toronto trip.
It's the Dr. Kathleen Ray Tour. Join now. We want to see you all over the place. Okay, so Kathleen, tell us, how can we get a hold of you?
Okay, well, I'll give you my toll-free phone number here first. It's 1-888-208-8565, or people can go to www.parentalalienationhelp.com or .org, or they can email me at drkathleenray@gmail.com.
Okay, and Tara has been so great, your assistant, to post in the chat room parentalalienationhelp.org for the Toxic Divorce Workbook, and then also for your study that you're doing. If you want to be a part of that, you need to take a look and see if you fit the parameters that Kathleen's asking you for to be a part of her a group for this study. Kathleen and Chris, this has been amazing, and Michelle does not know what she missed, but I'm going to make her listen to it, and then she will. So... Happy Parental Alienation Awareness Day to both of you.
And to you, too.
Thank you so much. And Kathleen, keep up the good work. Chris, take care of things in Alberta. You're doing a good job.
You are, too, Jill. Thank you very much. And Kathleen, thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank
Remember, everybody, the best thing that can happen is that your children will come home to you, and the worst thing that can happen is that you didn't even try. So keep it up. Never, ever give up. This is Family Matters, and we'll see you next time. Thanks, everybody. Thank you.